data exfiltration via surreptitious means from your network. Now, that could be, oh, some malware that has gotten onto some systems, and the mechanisms that it uses to do data exfiltration. So, a lot of people think that using proxies is a panacea. So they're saying, oh, well, we proxy our HTTP and HTTPS traffic. We proxy all of our web traffic. So we know what's going on there. But very few organizations are really thoroughly proxying traffic. So what I mean by that is they're not proxying typically anything other than maybe SMTP, FTP, and HTTP and HTTPS. They're probably not proxying DNS, and they are probably not utilizing overarching TCP UDP proxies. And the reality of the world we live in these days is that unless you've actually got a comprehensive approach in place that involves not just a perimeter security appliance, but of course a whole host of other approaches, then you really are leaving yourself wide open. And in terms of some examples of this, I recently completed a full network re-architecture project for a large company in another state, and they previously had had the interpretation that, oh, hey, we don't have any problems. People can log onto their computers and get to the internet, and they can do their job. And so, they understood the value proposition of security at a very high level. So, obviously they agreed to do the project. What they then experienced was something that I've seen happen hundreds of times, because I've done hundreds of network redesign projects, is that as soon as you actually gain visibility into what is happening on your network, there's a whole new attitude about, oh my, we never knew that was happening before. And so, preferably, you would have a scenario where you have segmented networks, and at each layer of that segmentation, you have full security network layer inspection happening. And the interesting thing that I find is that very, very, very few organizations are correctly doing network layer security. I would argue that if you're a large Fortune 500 company, yeah, you're probably doing it correctly because those people have the resources, those people are hiring qualified network and security architects to get these things set up correctly. But when you're looking at the small and medium organization space, what's known as the SMB market, so these could be small and medium nonprofits, charities, for-profit businesses, and also the education sector. In the majority of those cases, those organizations think that they don't have the resources to have appropriate network layer security so that they can even have visibility into what's going on. And I would argue that if the approach that you're considering is an approach where you put software on your switches, and you have to buy switches that have the capability to do that, then yeah, you're definitely looking at like a $60,000 price tag. And when you're looking at something like a $60,000 price tag for a network project because you have to use fancy pants switches that can actually run some application layer security right on the switches, plus then of course all the fancy software itself, that most definitely is outside of the price range of the vast majority of organizations. And I remember sitting in some Aruba partner training session earlier this year and being just highly, highly entertained, sitting in this training where the Aruba guys were talking about how, oh, well, you can do all this, fancy stuff with our switches, and, you can put the application layer, network layer security stuff right on the switches, and it can scale and all that. And I looked at them and I said, I can totally understand the applicability of this approach for massive enterprise. I mean, if you're a massive enterprise where you're a large corporation where you've got 30, 50, 100 switches, absolutely. Doing that at that level with that approach is the scalable methodology. But that sort of approach is complete unobtainium for the rest of the world. And so what you then have to look at is say, well, does can you know what is there just no solution for everybody else? No, that's complete bollocks. And I say that's complete bollocks because for the last 15 years, I've been extremely successful at making hardcore network layer security be very effective and very affordable for the SMB space. And the way that this generally comes from is you have to have a properly designed network with a properly designed perimeter security appliance that's functioning as the core router of your network. And when you do it that way, you're enabling that perimeter security appliance to have visibility into everything that's happening in the network. And to take action on that, to secure it, to report it, to put it into a SIM logging system where you can have analysis and so forth. But it's very important for the device to take action on its own so that you can have real-time correction of adverse events. But beyond that, you also have to have extremely effective reporting and analytics. And the part that I remember very dramatically sitting in that Aruba training was, these guys were talking about stuff where strictly just the baseline software to get it done would be, oh, $25,000. And I looked at them and I said, gee, I mean, I've been doing this stuff for 15 years with a cost profile of like $5,000 and less. So what is your problem? Why is it that their solution doesn't scale down? Okay, so I'm not going to say it's not applicable for massive enterprise. Sure it is, but that's unobtainium for the vast majority of people. So what we're going to talk about today is let's assume you don't have the resources of massive corporation, but yet you care about being secure and you don't want to have your data exfiltrated. Okay, so rule of thumb number one is going to be you actually have to have visibility into the data. If you don't have visibility into what is happening, whether it be in your cloud resources or your network resources or the resources on your server or whatever like that, you have no chance to protect it if you don't have visibility into it. So every element of the stuff that you care about, you have to have at least one or two mechanisms in place to have visibility into it, to keep an eye on it, watch what's going on, take behavioral actions based upon certain things that happen. You have to have that technology in place. So now I want to go into much more specific detail about a threat that most people do not even understand. And then I'm going to tell you how to mitigate that. So the threat is called DNS tunneling. Now, one of the things I said in the very beginning of this show was that a lot of people use HTTP and HTTPS proxies. Maybe they're using an SMTP proxy, but what they're probably not, and they might even be using an FTP proxy, but what they're probably not doing is a full TCP UDP proxy, and they're probably not proxying DNS traffic. Now, a lot of that comes from the fact that they don't understand how to configure those things, and they don't understand how to size equipment properly to handle that load. Because you can't just go and buy whatever and have it actually handle that kind of load. This is very similar to the whole discussion of do I do fast IPS scan or full IPS scan? Well, the answer should obviously be yes. If I'm going to want to have security, I should actually use full IPS scan. Fast scan is like running a three-legged race. It's going to be a hampered piece of functionality. But if you're going to do full scan, you need to have enough ponies in the box to get that job done. So that means that that appliance has to be sized properly. And by the way, calling a sales engineer at a hardware manufacturer is probably not going to get you the answer that you need, because sizing a perimeter security appliance is really an art form that is very specific and customized to the particular needs of your environment, which is why you need to select your key consultant vendor to assist you in actually sizing that properly, because only they know how you're going to utilize that appliance and what settings you're going to turn on, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, so let's talk more about data exfiltration over a DNS tunneling mechanism. And now this sounds like something that is so sophisticated that you couldn't possibly mitigate the threat. I would argue, yes, absolutely you can, and you don't have to be like an anti-hacking genius to get it done. So here's how you do it. The first step in mitigating DNS tunneling is to disallow DNS as a just a wide open free-for-all mechanism outside of your network to get out of your network. Now, if you're simply using what's called a DNS packet filter, that means anything that looks like and smells like DNS is going to be allowed to egress your network, means to leave your network, meaning there's no further inspection of that at all. And that is obviously a completely failed approach because we just failed the visibility test. Now, the way we get visibility is to utilize a proxy. Now, the proxy is sophisticated enough to say, okay, we're only going to allow the types of DNS requests that are appropriate, standardized, IEEE standarded. Okay, so those are legitimate DNS requests. Everything that's not legit, that doesn't look like a normal DNS request, will then just block it. So that's a big step right there, is just putting in a DNS proxy. Now, another big piece of that is to allow only the authorized devices on your network to be able to communicate out through the DNS proxy. Everything else is actually going to be blocked. So the way that this normally looks is on your guest network, yes, you allow all the guest devices to egress for DNS requests. Okay, that's fine. There's still going to be the proxy there, though. But as far as allowed from, they're all allowed. But on your trusted network, you've typically got Active Directory and a domain controller, and all of your domain controllers are DNS servers. So you can easily create a little collection that is, these are my domain controllers, and I'm only going to allow domain controllers to egress for DNS requests through the DNS proxy. So that means that Joe's computer, which should actually be talking to the domain controller for its DNS requests, Joe's computer cannot directly go to the internet and do DNS requests. So you're now restricting what can actually access the internet for DNS through the proxy. And it's a little more sophisticated than that, but that's the high level understanding of it. Now, we then, at the domain controller level, we say, well, we're going to use DNS Sec. So this is DNS security. The whole discussion of DNS Sec is like a whole nother radio show all into itself. So I'm going to leave that one for you to research. However, I would suggest that if you are an IT manager who is managing Active Directory DNS servers, do look that up. Don't be scared by DNS Sec. It is very, very, very easy to implement. Now, the next level is, boy, we better find out what's going on in these internal DNS logs. So, if we're going to have any sort of forensic backtrace capabilities that say, there was an event that occurred, and we want to be able to backtrace what happened. So, it was a request from Joe's workstation to the domain controller, then out the DNS proxy and the perimeter security appliance. And that was related to a security incident. Well, we need to be able to backtrace that. Now, the only way that that's going to happen is if you are smart enough to proactively turn on full detailed logging for DNS at the domain controller, which is not on by default. So my recommendation for that is you create a logs folder on the D drive. Never, 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 never write this to the C drive because you will run your hard, your domain controller's hard drive out of space. Don't do that. And if the operating system drive runs out of space, well, obviously the server doesn't function anymore. So create a logs folder on the D drive and then specify the DNS on that server to write a log file to that folder, and you know, use a good name such as like server name DNS log.log. Okay. And then you have to actually configure what is going to be logged and use your common sense approach for deciding what's going to be logged. So now you've got these nice logs and you can use a log analytics tool to get data out of those later if you need to. Okay. So we've got a perimeter security appliance DNS proxy in place. We're allowing only legit DNS requests out. One of the other interesting pieces that you can do with this DNS proxy is you can actually block access to known naughty domain names that you don't want to have your any sort of endpoints on your network get to. And I absolutely use this. I think it's great functionality. It's extremely effective. And by utilizing a properly programmed perimeter security appliance, you can also end up benefiting from reputation-enabled defense and botnet detection, which can also have a tremendous positive impact on just overall not allowing any endpoints on your network to even connect to those known bad sources. Okay, so the next step in terms of mitigation here is to use that TCP UDP proxy. So we're going to have specific HTTP and HTTPS proxies. We're going to have a DNS proxy, an FTP proxy. You may or may not have an SMTP proxy, depending upon what's inside your network. But you're definitely, definitely, definitely going to need a TCP UDP proxy, at least one for your trusted network, and at least one for your guest network. You might actually end up having more. So what happens in the TCP UDP proxy is you pull in the HTTP and HTTPS functions, you pull in a SIP function, you pull in an FTP function, and then it's kind of the catch-all for everything else as well. So what the TCP UDP proxy does is it says, you know, I'm going to look at this traffic, and it's claiming that it's port 6000. So, but really, I looked at it, and you know, that's really HTTP traffic. So what the TCP UDP traffic or proxy action does is it captures all of the items that are trying to evade your other security mechanisms by simply selecting to egress on a different port. So this is absolutely crucial. You know, a lot of people don't even realize that this is how the bad guys function, right? You know, the bad guys, it used to be, I could roll back the clock 10 years ago and or even further, and they would say the bad guys would utilize port 80 and 443, and it was the big joke because this was what was called the firewall avoidance ports, you know. And because every administrator out there had to have 80 and 443 open for egress. So the bad guys would write stuff that would work over that. There was this whole thing with Napster where Napster originally wanted to utilize their own ports and then everybody blocked Napster and then they rewrote Napster to get it to work over port 80 and then suddenly Napster couldn't be blocked anymore. You know, so obviously the world we live in today is very different from that to where now the bad guys are understanding that, wow, yeah, there actually are proxies on 80 and 443. There's still a lot of bad guys that are sending traffic over 443 because most organizations are not effectively utilizing deep packet inspection properly. Now, deep packet inspection is otherwise known as DPI. And the beyond stuffing things over 443 and hoping that the organization is not using a 443 or an HTTPS proxy. They're then using these other dynamic range ports and then saying, ah, well, I bet that administrator does not have a TCP UDP proxy in place. And the only environments that I've seen that are actually utilizing a TCP UDP proxy are my clientele. And I mean, I don't even hear people talk about it on security forums and stuff. I mean, unless you're talking about people who are managing large corporations. Again, I don't really worry about large corporations. I worry about the SMB space because, by and large, these people have not allocated the resources to covering their bases, right? And so this TCP UDP proxy is absolutely crucial. And in order to proxy all this traffic, which we've already established you have to do, you have to have an appliance that has the ponies to do it. And what I consistently see out there in the real world is that people have undersized appliances. Like, oh, I don't want to spend that much. And it's like, well, you know what? The fact is, if you spent $3,000 and the thing doesn't have the ponies to provide you the security levels that you needed for the next 3 years of your business, then you have just lit that $3,000 on fire. If instead you could have spent $3,500 or $4,000 to actually get something that had all of the capabilities that you needed for the next 3 years for your business, well, now that's actually big bang for your buck at that point, because if you take the $4,000 and you divide it by 3 years, that's actually a tiny amount of money to be protecting your business, entire network for on an annual basis. Okay, and this is how you really have to think about it. So we talked about logging. I'm going to post a very detailed article with this podcast, so I hope you'll check it out because I've got links to some pretty fascinating reference pieces out there. As an example, for those of you that want to go a little more crazy on seeing how DNS tunneling actually works, Luke Badgett published a way to use PowerShell to be able to install a DNS tunnel on an endpoint and then utilize that to exfiltrate data. And, you know, now this in itself is part of my mitigation routine, is not sitting there and trying to hack stuff, but understanding what mechanisms are utilized for the data exfiltration and looking at each one of those mechanisms and saying, okay, let's mitigate that threat, then mitigate that threat, and mitigate that threat. So in this case, utilizing PowerShell to be able to install a DNS tunnel on an endpoint, let's look at that for an example. So you got Joe in marketing who's browsing the internet, and Joe's managed to somehow download something that's a remote access Trojan, and it installs a piece of software on Joe's endpoint. And it tries then to use Joe's credentials to install a DNS tunnel on Joe's system to exfiltrate data using DNS tunneling. Well, if you have proper endpoint protection in place, that's going to help protect against weird behavioral problems, but what it won't do is it won't mitigate the threat of a legitimate PowerShell call using Joe's credentials. So you then have to say, well, what can I do to prevent Joe's credentials from being utilized to do this malicious thing? Well, it's actually a very simple answer, and it's called don't allow Joe to be an administrator on his computer. Because if Joe is not an administrator on his computer, how can his credentials be utilized to install the DNS tunneling mechanism? Well, it can't. Okay, now a lot of that then comes down to there's other nefarious techniques to actually steal crash cache credentials and things like that. But a lot that you can really have a significant improvement and positive impact by simply not allowing Joe to be an admin. People talk about how, oh, privilege escalation is supposed to, you know, mitigate these threats, and that's just baloney. Privilege escalation is good, it's a good thing, but it doesn't mitigate these threats. It just doesn't. You know, Talk to people who do this for a living. Talk to people who live in the real world who have to support thousands of endpoints like I do. And what you'll find is that, yes, privilege escalation is a necessary and good piece of functionality, but it does not mitigate the threat of allowing your end users to be administrators, which they just shouldn't be. Okay. So that's another very simple, easy thing for you to do in order to mitigate the threat of DNS tunneling being used to exfiltrate data from your network. Now, I talked about proper endpoint and host-based security product, right? But let's talk a little bit more about that. It is going to look at the behavioral stuff. So, for example, let's say the malware that got downloaded, the remote access Trojan, then tries to install a service, or it tries to make an auto-run entry, or it tries to do a browser hijacking. Any of those things your endpoint protection should see, and it should then stop that and say, and it not only should it alert you, it should log it, which should alert the administrator of your system. When I'm talking about the administrator, I'm talking about the person who is literally looking at the weekly security logs for all of the endpoints in your business, and the person who cares, okay? It's the person who really cares about the security of your environment. And this goes back to that example I said where, you know, on Monday, I was literally looking at the weekly security report from one of my clients. And I find in there where there's a notation that says that there were this many direct brute force account hacks that were attempted directly against the domain controller. And here's what was really interesting was that the malware that ended up being on the device that was on the trust that was allowed to be connected to the trusted wireless, that device was the malware was able to figure out what the domain controller was, which is really frankly not hard. And then it targeted that domain controller by IP address and tried to do brute force account hacking against it. Now, because of proper network setup, because of proper perimeter security appliance configuration uses a core router, the perimeter security appliance just stopped that attack dead cold in its tracks. And in reviewing those weekly security logs, then I was able to see, this is that machine that was doing that. And then the on-site IT manager was able to go and mitigate the risk of that endpoint being on the network. Okay. And so, you know, just for your own sake of curiosity, because now I know what you're saying is, well, how did the bad stuff get on that machine? Well, oftentimes what you'll find is that people have laptops and they take them home. And then they use those laptops at home. And when they're using their business laptop at home, they're wide open naked on the internet because they are not sitting behind a properly programmed perimeter security appliance. And in this case, this particular endpoint was really problematic because it was a home edition machine. It wasn't even pro. It didn't have any group policy on it as a you know, because of that, the user was browsing the internet as an admin account, and I'm not even entirely certain that there was endpoint protection on that device. So nonetheless, the IT manager had a lot of things to fix about that particular endpoint. And this example is extremely important because it demonstrates that a properly programmed and secured network can mitigate the threat of even just having non-standardized endpoints and what they can do. Now, the one thing it's not going to be able to do is to prevent that machine on the trusted network from attempting to hack other machines on the same trusted network, as long as it's on the same subnet. What the Firebox can do and what proper network security can do is to stop that from hacking devices on other subnets, such as if your server's on a different subnet. Okay. So proper endpoint protection is absolutely essential. And in the references section for this podcast, I've got information about how DNS commands are utilized for tunneling data over